So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh.
Chapter 46. Epilogue. We could have at least waited for your arm to heal, Corey said, frowning at the cast as they stood in the freezing cold outside Superman's fortress of jackassitude. The last few weeks at the manor had given Jason one hell of a case of cabin fever. He'd been officially able to move about on his own for a couple of weeks, but Alfred had put his foot down about when he was allowed to leave. And that wasn't until his over-the-elbow cast was downgraded to a regular forearm cast. He had waited exactly the length of time required for the cast to set, and then he'd bolted from the grounds. The outlaws had gotten out of the city a mere half hour later and headed straight to the Arctic. Jason had made use of his convalescence, and now it was time to carry out his revenge. Unfortunately, however, getting through the Fortress of Solitude's bat-provided security was proving difficult in the intense cold, but Jason had taken advantage of his time at home and had fully raided the Batcave when the others were out patrolling the city. Batman's paranoia could actually come in handy at times, like when he wanted to use that paranoia to break into a high-tech alien fortress. Bruce was actually the one to set up the fortress's security in the first place, as Superman had apparently just been leaving the key on the doorstep like a moron, which meant that Bruce's security additions were completely spelled out in his files. The only way it would have been any easier was if Jason had both arms to work with. And if he wasn't freezing his balls off, of course. That would have taken too long. I've been waiting for this since Christmas, Jason replied calmly. He sat back with a grin as the huge doors that looked as if they were carved from pure ice shifted open. The two men hurried inside, eager to get out of the cutting wind. Corey, dressed in next to nothing, followed leisurely behind. All three paused as soon as the doors were shut, eyes wide as they looked around the massive space. "Okay, then," Jason said after a moment of staring at the huge crystal towers. "You've got to be kidding me," Roy exclaimed, suddenly pissed. "Why is it that all big shot heroes get the cool shit and we're pretty much taking around the world tour of motels?" "First off, we're not heroes, we're outlaws," Jason said, rolling his eyes as he pressed further into the space. It wasn't much warmer inside than it was out, but the chill wind was gone, which helped dramatically. "Secondly, we have a kick-ass alien spaceship and an island." "The island isn't actually ours," Roy argued. "It's ours," Jason countered firmly. He turned his back to his two teammates and grinned. "So, shall we get started?" Corey gave him a look that made it abundantly clear she was humoring him, and probably only because of the incident with the Joker. She turned and headed off to explore the inner depths of the fortress all the same. Roy looked around, bouncing on his toes, no doubt trying to figure out where Superman stored all the good stuff. The stuff that he thought was too dangerous to be held by humanity. Self-righteous asshole. "Go nuts," he said. And Roy didn't need to be told twice. He took off eagerly, and Jason turned his attention to the iced-over ground of the large center room of the fortress. It would work perfectly for what he had in mind. He pulled a can of red spray paint out of the pocket of his huge parka and got to work. Within a few short minutes, "Jason Todd was here," was scrawled in huge block letters across the fortress floor. Jason grinned and tossed the can aside before turning his attention to the rest of the fortress. He wandered for a bit before he found the crystals that contained something approximating Superman's father. He didn't try to figure out how to use them. He could have if he wanted. Bruce had mentioned them in his notes on the fortress. And Jason could have delved deeper, figured out exactly how to get them working. But that wasn't quite the point. Instead, he sat down to write the big guy a quick note. Dear super asshole, this is what it feels like to have your deepest memories violated and put on display for someone else to see. But since I'm actually a decent person and not a hypocritical bastard, I left yours alone. It's called taking the high road, you prick. Pull the same shit again and I won't be so nice. Also, mind your own fucking business. Next time I shoot the Joker, it'll be with a kryptonite bullet. Consider yourself warned. JT. Jason left the note pinned to a pillar of ice with one of the knives he wasn't super attached to. Then he went back to find Corey and Roy. Corey had been carelessly going through what he guessed were the living quarters, as there were Superman suits and what looked like Kryptonian robes scattered and tossed everywhere. Kryptonians, she scoffed, tossing another set of robes aside. Horrendous taste in fashion. He smirked. You just have to look at the suit to tell that, Corey. She made an agreeing noise in the back of her throat, and they went off to find Roy. He was deep in the bowels of the fortress, standing in a room that was either a trophy room or a storage room, and his arms were completely full of foreign technological devices. He looked like a kid on Christmas morning. Having fun? Jason smirked. Holy shit, Jaybird! He declared in a rush. We hit the mother load! We'll have to watch him, Corey spoke, amused. He might just blow up the planet on accident. Then everything with the planet eaters will have been for nothing. Hey! Roy protested, offended. If I blow up the planet, it will be on purpose. I'm not an amateur. Jason rolled his eyes. Of course. Now grab what you're keeping and let's get out of here before the big blue asshole shows up. Roy hurried forward and dumped a bunch of crap on Corey before snatching up a few more devices, including one that looked suspiciously like a flamethrower. Okay, I'm good. They were still over the polar ice caps when Jason's phone rang. He wasn't at all surprised to see it was Bruce. Don't answer it, Roy said immediately. But Jason was riding high and feeling daring. He swiped his thumb across the screen and grinned as he spoke. Is this you being a helicopter parent? I haven't even been gone a day. Bruce ignored the question. Why are you in the Arctic Circle? Jason frowned and put the phone on speaker before he started dismantling the frame to look for the tracker. Bruce had promised he wouldn't use the comm to track him, and he was believing it for now. But he hadn't said anything about additional trackers. He should have known better, honestly. Still, when in a bind, deny, deny, deny. The Arctic Circle? The hell would I be doing in the Arctic Circle? That's what I'm asking, Jason, Bruce said, voice pure Batman disapproval. Jason rolled his eyes as he found the tracker nestled under the sound card. He crushed it between his fingers. What a completely obvious and unoriginal place to put it. It was like Bruce wasn't even trying, which was hella suspicious. Bruce always tried. He was a master at planting trackers, and he was much more creative than this, so why had the tracker been so easy to find? Obviously, because it was a decoy, designed for Jason to find and dispose of so that he would think he was safe and wouldn't look for the real tracker. He glared at the phone and set it down so that he could pull off his jacket and start checking his gear. Bruce was in for a world of surprise if he thought Jason was going to make things easy for him. He might have an easy enough time tracking the others, but he was going to make him work for it. Why don't you tell me, since you're the one who seems to think I'm there in the first place? He retorted, yanking off his boots. Beside him, Roy sighed as Jason took a knife to the soles. Bruce's voice cut in sternly. You accessed my files last week, specifically files on the Fortress of Solitude. Ah, Jason thought he covered his tracks, but he supposed security had been updated more than once since he died. he really should have gotten Tim to give him a run-through of the new security protocols. But the kid was still off in San Francisco pretending he didn't have a family. Hell, Baby Bird could have easily covered his tracks. Kid really needed to come back from California. Your accusation is erroneous, and I am highly offended. Do you accuse the replacement or golden boy of this kind of shit too, or am I just special? He demanded, tossing the boots aside. A quick search of the rest of his gear revealed nothing, and Jason frowned as he tried to figure out where Bruce put the real tracker. I have video footage of you at the computer at the time the files were accessed. Oh, Jason was not falling for that. He'd totally looped the footage before he'd even touched the computer. He was actually competent at his job, thank you very much. Hypothetically, if someone did access the files, I'm pretty sure they would have wiped the video evidence of it happening.
I've put in secondary cameras and a secondary system, Jason. Bruce retorted, voice hard and unamused.
Jason rolled his eyes yet again. Of course you did, because nothing says paranoid bastard like redundant surveillance systems. And then his eyes widened as he jerked his gaze to his cast. Bruce had been hovering when Alfred did his new cast. Jason thought it hadn't been any different than the hovering he had been doing for the past couple of weeks, and he'd been pretty focused on his conversation with Alfred. It would have been difficult to slip in without them noticing, but if anyone was capable of it, Bruce was. And nothing said paranoid bastard like slipping a tracker into his son's cast while he wasn't paying attention. He pulled out one of his sharpest knives, and Roy made a surprised noise as Jason put the sharp edge to the cast and started carefully slicing down.
Enough, Jason, Bruce growled in annoyance. Why did you break into the Fortress of Solitude?
Jason started making fake static noises just because he knew how much an obvious ploy would annoy the hell out of him. B, you there? You're breaking up. I'm losing you, Dad. He said, tossing the D word in just to throw him off. Before Bruce could retort, he slammed the end call button. He pulled out the SIM card and the battery just to be safe, before turning his attention back to the cast. Jaybird, why are you cutting off your cast 2 weeks early? Roy asked, staring at him like he'd grown another head.
The phone was a decoy.
He sighed and shook his head. Bats! Jason was careful not to shift his left arm as he got the cast open, and sure enough, it took very little digging to find the real tracker. He crushed it with extreme prejudice.
So now what? Roy asked.
Now we book it the hell out of Dodge. It won't be long before Soups is here to investigate. Where do we go? Corey asked. Even with a spaceship, there's nowhere we can go that Superman can't follow.
We get as far away as physically possible without leaving the planet, Jason said, an idea forming in his mind.
What, the South Pole? Roy asked, unimpressed.
Jason grinned.
Guys, we're finally going to see the fucking penguins. Roy stared at him in disbelief for a moment, but Corey laughed and nodded.
Yes, let's go see the penguins.
All right, fine, let's go see some penguins, Roy replied, even as he dug through the med kit for a temporary stabilizer for Jason's still broken arm.
Tell you what, though, Jaybird, these better be some awesome penguins. I mean, I want them doing flips and shit.
They'll be awesome, Jason replied with confidence.
And afterward, let's go somewhere with chili dogs and milkshakes.
Now that I fully support, Roy piped in.
He nodded.
And then let's find some bad guys to shoot and some shit to blow up.
Oh, so a normal day for the outlaws, Corey said fondly.
Jason smirked. Exactly. Just a normal day for the outlaws.
The end.
me likes to sing along with me, but she won't sing this song if she needs all the leave. She'll pity the men I know. So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy, just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh.
Music used in this podfic is Bad Guy by Billie Eilish. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening! Author's notes. Note at the end of chapter 42, the climactic confrontation between the Joker and Jason with the side of Batman and Superman. Author's notes. I would also like to say that I am very much pro-Joker dying. I'm extremely pro the Joker dying by Jason's hand. And I am extremely pro the Joker dying by Jason's hand in this storyverse. There's a reason that it doesn't happen now, though, and that's because I wanted to explore the potential for reconciliation between Jason and Bruce without either of their stances changing. We're going to get more into this in the next few chapters, but because I know people are going to have opinions about this, which is totally fair, I thought I'd go ahead and address it. I didn't want to create a situation where Bruce and Jason can only reconcile if the Joker's dead, or vice versa. They can only reconcile if Jason gives up the way he feels about it and just gives in to what Bruce wants. Which, the latter, I assure you, will not happen in this story. I don't want a story where one party has to compromise completely in order to achieve any sort of reconciliation. Because if one gives in completely while the other completely gets their way, that's not fair or equal. It might seem that Bruce is completely getting his way now because the Joker is still alive, but I promise that's not what's happening. Just bear with me for a while longer. This is going to be fleshed out a lot more in the aftermath, and I'll be sharing my thoughts in the following chapters as well. Hope you enjoyed the chapter, even if the damn Joker is still alive.
You can't see my face right now, but let me assure you that the sheer disgust I am giving, I am looking at in the direction of my window where I could hear this person outside who definitely didn't have a muffler. Let me just assure you, it was epic. Get a muffler.
Reader's note about cabinets and countertops. I'm currently recording chapter like 26 or 7 or something. The one where he installs the countertops. Okay, so I'm a giant nerd and actually took a cabinet making technology. It was like woodworking, cabinetry and woodworking technology course, which was cabinetry and woodworking plus a bunch of the technology related to all of this. And just, I have so many thoughts about what Jason is doing here. So many. First off, mitering your countertops. Jason. Kiddo, Jason. You, as far as I'm aware, are not a woodworker. Though, you've done a good job so far. Oh, mitering is really, really hard, and I can only hope that you have, like, a million miles of butcher's block, because you are gonna fuck that up so bad, dude.
so bad. So many times.
Yeah, so there's that.
I may or may not be speaking from experience about fucking things up so bad so many times. And also, like, sanding. Sanding is a thing. You sand a lot. I'm just going to assume that he has some sort of electric-powered sander, or that he bought a air compressor and has an air-powered sander, which is what most of them are, powered by compressed air. Probably an orbital sander, but also maybe a plane, probably also a belt sander, like a hand belt sander, to get all of that nice and smooth. Also, Jason, ventilation for ceiling. Lots of ventilation, please. Please. Please, lots of ventilation. I know it's in the dead of winter. As someone who has decided that they are going to do stuff in their apartment, specifically ceiling stuff in their apartment, I did my stuff in May, and actually I did most of it on the balcony, and I still gave myself a massive migraine because I did not buy a proper mask for it, like an actual painting mask for it, not just one of the ones that just goes over your mouth, but one of the ones with like filters and stuff. And I think I did a little bit of the ceiling inside and then moved it out onto the balcony, even though it was freezing. And yeah, I regretted it. So Jason, please ventilate, please. Because whatever you're going to use to seal it, it is going to probably have fumes. Like, it's going to be food safe once it like dries and whatever. It would have to be food safe, obviously, for a countertop. But still. Also, like, sorry, okay, this is just going to be like 10 minutes of me nerding out about cabinets because he's putting in cabinets. Sidebar, white ceilings does seem to be the thing. Like, I get what the author is going for here, you know, light colored ceiling, you know, brightens the whole place up, that sort of thing. I have actually been told by my cabinetry people that possibly a dark ceiling works to make a space feel bigger. I have not confirmed this in my own self, but it's possible. The theory being that you don't really see black stuff and it just kind of disappears. Dunno. Anyway, in this case, white ceiling, approval choice. But talking about countertops. So yeah, all of those kind of countertops, I mean, all of the options that he had, like slate and soapstone. I don't know why you would use soapstone for a countertop. And like concrete and stuff. Yeah, that's totally all great. Most of the time what countertops are made out of. And I understand that Jason is going like upscale chic, basically. Modern loft type thing. Most countertops, like if you go to a random apartment building, for example. Or like, yeah, let's go with random apartment building at this point. Most countertops are going to be laminate covered. So they're actually just like particle board or... yeah, probably particle board. And it's just covered in laminate. Sorry to take the mystique away, but that's what it is. And that is perfectly fine. Like, there are different kinds of laminate and different ways that you would want to, like, different reasons why you would have different types of, like, laminate used in different countertop situations. That, incidentally, is also why you're not supposed to put hot things on your countertop. And why, if, say, you watch a cooking channel, like I watch Bon Appetit all the time on YouTube, and they're always like just shoving down pans straight from the heat right onto their countertops. And you're like, why? And the reason you're not supposed to do that in your own home is because the laminate is actually glued to the particle board. That's how you do it. And when you put a hot thing on there, it won't necessarily burn the laminate or melt the laminate. Like, that's not what it's going to do. What it's going to do is cause the glue to release underneath. And then you're going to get, like, bubbles and crap. And it's going to be terrible and warped. Yeah. I mean, you also might burn the laminate. I say. Definitely not speaking from experience. But, okay, so if he's going for upscale chic, sort of that sort of thing, they didn't even mention, oh, what is it called? Solid surface. That's what it's called. Okay, so the one thing that I was like, no, get this thing, is called solid surface. And I mean, it's not perfect. And I fully endorse Jason doing wood countertops because I took a woodworking course and I really do like the substance. But Flowform, I mean, solid surface is, it's pretty great. And it honestly is probably one of the most expensive options there. So if you're going for upscale chic, there you go. And it's a thing that you can put hot things directly on. It's a human made creation. But it turns out looking a lot like having stone countertops, only you don't need to seal it. Like, you sand it down until it's really, really nice and smooth, and then you are good to go. And you can cut it like you do wood. So he could even just have a chunk of it, like, bam. Like, just have a chunk of it delivered and cut it himself if he really wanted to, because you can cut it with a circular saw. I think it's, like, slightly, like, it would nick easier than laminate, I think, is the thing. Like, it's not quite as durable, but you can always just, like, sand that shit down. And they make, like, special glue for it. Like, the companies that sell this, that's exactly the same color. So you can glue it together and you literally can't see a seam. Anyway, this is my disappointment. That is, like, ultra nerdy. Anyway, I apologize. Also, when you hang cabinets, upper cabinets, like lower cabinets, you like just legit screw them to the wall because that's what you do. But generally when you hang upper cabinets, you don't just screw them to the wall. You actually, I mean, like, I'm sure you can, but the way that I was taught to hang upper cabinets, you actually put basically a block of wood on the outside of the back of the cabinet, and that's what you screw to it, and you make sure that that's exactly level on all of the cabinets. And then you put a bracket on the wall, basically another block of wood, and you can either do this with wood or you can get, like, special metal bits that are meant exactly for this, and you put that on the wall, and then you just slide the two into each other. Like, anyway, they clip together, kind of, and you just literally hang the cabinets. Also, bonus, a lot of other stuff that you do with the cabinets that I'm just going to, like, assume that either A, Jason gives no shits about, or B, that Jason is doing, and you just, no one cares. No one cares, Opal. No one cares. Anyway, you have to shim a bunch of stuff because walls, especially if you're on a brick wall, like, walls are not even, floors are not level. Like, so you just end up, like, shimming a bunch of stuff. So it's level, both, like, level like you would stick just a plain level down on the countertop, or, and level, like, as in all of the, like, fronts of the counter, like, fronts of the cabinets are all exactly flush with each other. And then, because you've shimmed a bunch of shit, at the base, you just shove a baseboard, like a foot plate on there, and no one will ever know. And right behind, like, to shim your, the fronts of your upper cabinet so that they're exactly flush, those you just kind of hope that nobody notices. You shove them up in there and then you trim them. And nobody will notice because they're not nerds. Anyway, that was a very long ramble. I think it was legit like 10 or 15 minutes of me nerding out over cabinets and woodworking and being very impressed with Jason, but also slightly dubious, especially with the cabinet stuff. Also, you really should seal your stuff. Like, I didn't get into the construction side of things.
But I do know that you're supposed to, like, water seal stuff. There's a very... It's called taping. And, like, it's like a plastic seal or something. And maybe in the States, they don't worry about this as much. But in Canada, especially the parts of Canada that I am from, it gets very cold. And I would... But I would assume this happens in the States anyway. Anyway, the taping is to keep moisture from outside from getting into your insulation. And that is also a really finicky business, because if you puncture that, moisture can get in, your insulation can rot, etc., etc., etc. Anyway, I assume you have to tape a roof, your roof stuff. Yeah, my apologies for this giant rambly nerd fest. Yeah. I should get back to the story. This was Opal's nerd time. Okay. I just forgot. Well, okay. So a couple more things, because nerd. Yeah, it looks like author of this fic has assumed that Jason is going to sand all of this by hand. No. No. You, no. Secondly, drawers are actually not that bad to put in when you do all the measuring. And I am assuming that having bought these cabinets and having them assumedly they were delivered put together for him, which, hey, plus Jason, good choice. Good choice. Thank you for not trying to build your own cabinets. Anyway, I assume all the drawer slides are in, so, like, drawers are going to be super easy to put on for Jason to put in, because you just slide them in. That's what you do. Doors suck to put on, but maybe, oh, the hinges are probably, still, no. Doors suck, because you have to make sure that they look nice, because they're what people see. They're so hard to get right. Note on using wood dust and wood paste. It would definitely help with the wood paste, and it would look super good for quite a while. You can do the same thing with if you, like, put nails in and you wanted to smooth that over, or if you, like, ding something. The problem with it is, if you want to stain anything, that's not, like, it's not going to take stain the same way, which Jason isn't doing, so that's fine. But also, when it ages, it's not going to, like, discolor the same way. Like, wood discolors naturally. It's what it does. And your wood, even just, like, using white glue and wood dust, like, it's going to look great for quite a while, and then as the wood starts aging, it's not going to look great in the long run. So, you know, pro tip. Now I'm on chapter 30, and I'm reading about Jason's reactions to snow, the first snow in Gotham, and we're about to get to the point where he talks about all of the stuff that, like, where he gives instruction to the homeless kids and stuff. Honestly... Okay, so my reactions to this chapter entirely have to do with where I live and what my personal climate is like in the place that I live. So I live in Canada, and I don't just live, like, I don't live in, like, on either of the coasts or in southern Ontario or any of that stuff. I live, like, smack dab in the middle of the prairies. This is the place, even though... it's south in the prairies for us, like not in the north of central Canada, but it still gets really cold because climate, geography, etc. We have no large bodies of water around here to make us temperate at all. So we are, yeah, in... so in summer here, it gets up above plus 30, and in winter it gets down to, I think last winter we hit minus 45 for like 2 weeks Celsius. This is all Celsius.
and minus, we might have hit minus 50 one day. But we were definitely for a solid week below minus 40. It was very, very cold last winter. Anyway, so that's my experience with winter. And I have never been homeless. I have never even been close to being homeless. So I don't know if what I am saying is actually relevant to that experience here. But I know that I'm outside a fair amount. I don't have a car. I walk everywhere. And here in my climate specifically, snow, when I look outside and I see that it's snowing, like in winter, I actually perk up. Because, yeah, like everything Jason says about it being wet and all of that stuff, yeah. Yep, that sucks if it gets in your boots and all of that sort of stuff. But here in my climate, when it's snowing, it means it's not cold. And like, I mean, I get that that sounds ridiculous if you take it out of context, because for snow to form, it has to be below zero. But considering that, theoretically, at least, this doesn't always work, but most of the time, it doesn't snow if it's super cold here. If I look outside and it's the dead of winter, so January, February, if I look outside and it is blazingly sunny, really bright, clear, I look outside and I'm like, oh no. Because those are the days where it's like minus 45. And if I look outside and it looks gray and overcasty and snowing, especially big fat flakes of snow like you see in like Christmas commercials and stuff, that's when I know it's going to be like minus 10. Or probably not minus 10 in January, February, but like minus 15. Because that's when it's warm. So again, like, I have never been homeless. I have never any of that. But in my personal experience, I associate snow actually hilariously with it being warm. Like, it is warm enough to snow. So Jason talking about, like, freezing, like, being worried about freezing to death and all of that sort of stuff, I, like, when I think about snow in winter, I think, oh, that's a potential shelter. Because we get so much of it here that you can literally create a potential shelter out of snow. Oh, Quincy's and igloos. Like legit, there's enough snow in the city to do that, to make a Quincy. I'm pretty sure they'd get mad at you for it, I think. But you could entirely do it in one of the parks. There's 100% enough snow. And those can get pretty warm with just your body heat if you make it actually correctly. So anyway, a long tangent about snow and how this entire chapter feels weird to me because, yeah, I associate snow actually with warmth rather than freezing cold. Though, again, this does come from a place of not having been through what Jason is talking about. So, like, I could be entirely wrong. Shit goes down. More shit goes down. Okay. So, reader's notes, part, like, whatever, 8. It's probably part, like, 4. But anyway, yeah, so I'm in the middle of the fear gas episode. I think it's like chapter 34 or something. And like, I've been thinking this for a while and we're going all in on reader's notes. So why not? Yeah, so this fic is written explicitly Jen with no pairings. And it's just all like found family happiness and all of that sort of stuff. Well, found family, not happiness. Anyway, family feels. But yeah, as someone who ships Tim and Jason, yeah, I ship it hard. And this fic, like, just, Tim is so good with Jason, with, like, knowing his boundaries and trusting him. And he's the first one to figure it out. And the reverse, like, every time Jason is, like, worries about whether Tim is eating. And, like, so if you're reading this fic completely, Jen, and I hope I haven't, like, messed with that in any way, I haven't been trying to, then, like, that's entirely brotherly concern, and it's a family thing, and that's lovely. In my brain, at least, yeah, there's some feels there. And I ship it so hard, and it would work so well. Yeah, sorry, I'm just having lots of feelings right now as Tim is drawing Jason's blood, and it was explicitly like, Tim is trusting Jason, and Jason is trusting Tim, and I'm just like, feelings! Consequences of living across the street from a hospital, even though it's quite a ways across the street, but still. Yay, ambulances. On the plus side to living across the street, roughly, from a hospital, is that, when you fall off your rollerblades, because rollerblades plus a fair amount of wind plus a fucking stick in the sidewalk, stick on the sidewalk as in tiny part of a tree, yeah, it causes you to go down hard and blood everywhere. Yeah, when you clean it out and figure that you can't handle it yourself, well, the hospital and all attached, you know, walk-ins, emergency rooms, etc., is right there. Ha ha. Ha 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 ha. I say, having, you know, just changed all my bandages. Ow. It's honestly not as bad as it looks. I mean, it kind of is, in that the elbow wound is pretty deep, and the shin, it's on the front part of my leg, frontish, sideish part of my leg. Anyway, that is mostly road rash, but it stings, yo. Yay! I finished it.